fields of bodies burning as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Hi, this is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news.
And I'm Dan Dugan, the other guy on the other side. WGRN, the Green Renaissance.
Hi, this is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news. 94.1 WGRN, the Green Renaissance. And I'm here with a Renaissance woman. Or as I like to call her, my Nubian sister, Marilyn Howard, Ph.D., professor at Columbus State Community College. And she's gifted enough to not only teach black studies and black history, but political science. So a longtime colleague of mine and supporter of the free press. Welcome.
Well, Bob, we have been on the radio for a long time together, so this is a real treat when I found out that you wanted me to come by this evening, so I'm happy to be here.
And you can find some of her book reviews. She's written many for thefreepress.org. Well, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, I think you're a little more moderate and cautious and reflective than I am on occasion, is the death of George Herbert Walker Bush, and really how it's been perceived by the mainstream media and culture. And was he really lucky enough to die when Donald Trump was president, which makes him look really,
timing,
really
yes.
good.
The timing is
like
just
in
terrific,
comedy,
yeah.
right? Timing is everything.
Well, you know, I grew up being taught that you shouldn't speak ill of the dead. There's plenty of time for that after you get him in the ground and you go to the repast. But, gosh, it was almost like when Kennedy died or something, glowing tributes, and you know, it was incredible. And I think some of the things...
But do you attribute that primarily to Trump and a completely different style?
Oh, yes. I mean, even people were saying they missed George W. Bush, and these are people who were vehemently against him. But, yeah, I'm sure that the contrast is particular. And, you know, what's odd is that... Bush, the elder, actually said he wanted the president at his funeral, unlike John McCain, who said, I don't want him anywhere near my funeral. So I think, too, that can you imagine how happy the president was? Oh, yippee, I got invited to a funeral. But so I think that in a sense, in some way, I think Trump was really cowed by that. You know, he's sitting on the bench with all the living presidents and their wives, and did you read the statements he put out? I know he doesn't write those, but I was surprised at their tone, and particularly since he had been so hard on Jeb Bush when he was running for the presidency. There's a lot of bad blood between him and Jeb.
Well, and also George Herbert Walker Bush made it clear he was voting for Hillary Clinton.
Yes, he did. He did. But he said, you know, he's my president too. And so he wanted him there. So I think that helped to... lessen the usual craziness that comes out of the mouth of this current president. But I love the way they took the limo 25 yards to go over to the vice presidential residence, where they allowed the Bushes to stay, so they wouldn't have to stay in a hotel, just to see the Bush family. Well, it was 25 yards, and they took the limousine. I don't know why they didn't walk, but what are you going to do?
Good question.
Probably those 5-inch heels his wife always wears. Can you imagine what her feet must look like?
So you were making a point that really there was a handful of these World War II vets, of which, again, George Herbert Walker Bush was one of them.
And he was a genuine, he had a stellar record, war record.
Well, he was the youngest pilot, was it in the...
And he was shot down, and he said he never understood why when he was shot down, because you're not supposed to be shot down, why he was a hero and other people who, you know, finished their flights and their bombing missions and stuff were not heroes. But anyway, it is what it is. Yeah, there was if you think about it, there were a handful of them. John McCain, Daniel Inouye, Bob Dole, Jimmy Carter. People forget that Carter was in the Navy. and H.W. And Dole is alive. He was at the services at the Capitol. He's in very poor health, but he was dressed to the nines, and he had someone help him out of his wheelchair and onto his feet so that he could salute H.W. And, you know, you had to have a really hard heart to not think that that was a poignant kind of scene. You know, he had to salute with his left hand because his right hand was mangled when he was in World War II. You know, he spent months in the hospital after he came back stateside.
It wasn't the story he threw a grenade and it bounced back?
I didn't want to mention that, but it's just a rumor. You can't always believe it. And then Inouye was badly hurt,
I always
said,
like Dole, I still remember him falling off the stage and bouncing and getting up. And it's like Teddy Roosevelt and finishing his speech. I was thinking...
And the other thing was that he spoke out about erectile dysfunction. I mean, would you think that there'd be another public man who would do that? If you're doing a commercial, the assumption is you probably suffered from it, and you're probably glad that they stumbled on the Viagra effect, because that was supposed to be a heart medicine, I think. Yeah, it wasn't that, and doctors who had these patients taking them noticed that the patients didn't want to give them back when they were well. So, you know, they looked further and, oh, my goodness. So, but yeah, the five of them, Inouye, Dole, H.W., Carter, McCain, and the only person left is Carter, and he's, what, 94? He's about the same age.
Well, you can't bury Dole yet.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, he's at least Bush's age and maybe older, and he's in really bad shape. But, you know, you're right. Sometimes people linger like that. But, you know, we have these five men who either aspired to the presidency or at least aspired to coming to Washington and trying to make a difference. And Inouye died when Obama was still in office, I think, during his second term. But this is like boom, boom, boom. And so we're down to Carter and Dole. Carter's in great health. He had that malignant brain tumor, and they got it all, and he's busy, you know.
Little immunotherapy.
Yeah, busy building houses for Habitat for Humanity. In fact, there was a story in a magazine several months ago about the house he and his wife shared. It's just a $155,000 split-level house on a regular street. So he is in good health, but Bob Dole is in very bad health, and so...
Well, I like to be deliberate and chronological when you go over the Bush historical record. Mm-hmm. Number one, one of the reasons it was thought that he joined the Air Force in whatever capacity... was he a naval fighter pilot, correct? Yeah. Was that in part his father had an awful record on Nazism.
Oh, I didn't know that. Prescott.
Prescott Bush helped fund the Nazi party. So you're in a situation where he joined in many ways... to help
to
his
pave
father
the way.
Out.
To pave the way. And also, you know, that was what men, particularly, you don't see wealthy men going into the military now, but in those days, in the 40s, that was a way to test your mettle, but also a way of helping out your country.
And of course, the Bush family struck it rich in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm.
They did. That nursing home that was there, that was the former Prescott Mansion, is now a series of condominiums. I was mm-hmm. looking at one online the other day.
Out in Marble Cliff?
In Marble Cliff, across the street from Our Lady of Victory Catholic Church.
And how much
The one I was looking
write?
At yesterday was listed at $425,000.
All right. That's the old Bush Mansion.
Yeah. So they've been their condos,
and down the street they've changed the name of it here on Broad Street. It was St. Matthew's Episcopalian Church, which was their family church, within walking distance of where we're doing the show. But that was Samuel Prescott Bush.
So that would have been the grand George H.W.'s grandfather,
who's buried at Greenlawn Cemetery.
Okay. We should go out there one day.
And he, of course. Became rich because of the Rockefeller family.
Well, the other thing that my students in the African American history class, the first one is before emancipation, mm-hmm. and apparently there's a history of slave owning in the Bush family. So,
Yeah, they were Columbus, and then there was George Herbert Walker, the dry goods family, mm-hmm. very wealthy out of Missouri.
Yeah, so they, you know, they all, you know, are together
and
in this one little clique. Yeah,
George Herbert Walker is of Walter of Walker Cup mm-hmm. golf fame. So you had Samuel Prescott Bush, who again worked for the Rockefeller family, was handpicked by Frank Rockefeller, John D's brother, to take over Buckeye Steel Castings on the south side of
yes,
the city.
Yes, one of the premier factories that allowed many black people to pull themselves mm-hmm. into the lower and middle classes.
And then you had Prescott Bush, who worked through the Union Banking Corps to help finance the Nazi Party and to make money off it. Then you had George Herbert Walker Bush, and again, that some of the stuff they didn't bring up, he was involved with Zepeda Oil, so many people thought he had ties to the CIA early on. You recall he got rich in the oil
yes.
business when he moved to Texas, when he really was responsible for the first deep water oil wells off Kuwait.
And they,
in 60,
yeah.
61. Not that he actually did it, but he had the contract.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that didn't come up was how close that Bush father and son are to some of the Saudi leaders.
And Michael Moore in his movie Fahrenheit 9/11 got into that.
You know that picture of George W. holding hands with one of the Saudi leaders who had come to Washington. So... Mm-hmm. They've got deep tentacles or deep roots, but the Nazi story is interesting because that would have been a way for a young man to test himself, not at college. You know, George W. is of the generation that you just want the gentleman see. But H.W.
was an honor student.
Yes, honor student, and that going into the military, I mean, many wealthy sons of wealthy men went to the military. Even Hollywood actors, you don't see that now. In fact, in this third and fourth generation of Kennedys, all those grandchildren of Robert and John, only one of them is in the military. Only one. Mm. So this would have been the primary way that wealthy guys like H.W. and that would sort of make a name for themselves. And, you know, strike out. And he really did some of the things they said about him were true. He really is the last of the patrician politicians who are, you
know,
those aristocrats.
Well, they said the man who was elected president on thank you notes.
Yes, yes.
By being gracious
yes.
and having good manners.
That word came up so much. I think I've heard that word more this week than I've heard it in my entire life.
That?
Gracious. The Bushes were gracious. There's even an article, I didn't read it, but there's even an article about from a former Secret Service agent, why we loved Bush 41. So they were well-loved by the staff there at the White House, but that came up time and time again as gracious. And that clearly is something that is no longer in politics and definitely not in the White House.
Yeah, Barbara wearing her fake pearls instead of the real ones.
Yes, yes. So she should have hung on to those. Jackie's fake pearls went for $256,000.
You're listening to WGRN 94.1. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. It's Dr. Bob Fitrakis here with my special guest, Dr. Marilyn Howard, professor at Columbus State. Well, back to the Bushes. One of the things that I didn't hear come up, he originally was elected as a Jim Crow congressman.
He
was opposed
yes.
to the Civil Rights Act.
He was opposed to that. He only did two terms in Congress, two terms in the House.
Right.
So he was only there for
although
4 years.
Although many people said that there was no real notion of him being personally prejudiced, but
and
he was a bit opportunistic
yes.
in running
who
in
Texas. Has
vouched
for him, and that would be Jesse Jackson.
Oh, okay.
Yes, indeed. That he.
If Jesse says he's okay,
he must be okay.
He's okay.
But apparently personally and intellectually, you know, he knew that was wrong. He didn't see the point of it. Particularly, he said when it really hit him was when he visited in Vietnam and he saw all these black and Mexican American soldiers who could not get deferments. And he actually talked about that very passionately. You know, they went to Vietnam and they were coming back in body bags or badly maimed or hooked on drugs or anything. So, you know, at least by that, he was making the connection. And, you know, one of his sons is married to a Mexican one. Do you remember the time they were all his grandkids were around?
The little brown ones.
The little brown ones.
Oh,
the press was on him for days. But he said, you know, he was proud of those kids. That was, you know, he just wanted to make sure you were looking at the right kids. And he meant no harm with that. But, yeah, you hear this gracious all the time. And that personally he didn't seem, you know, that a lot of these things were opportunistic.
Well, what about Willie Horton? Do we write that off?
No. No. Well, a lot of that was
Roger Ailes and Lee Atwater.
Remember when Lee Atwater was diagnosed with terminal cancer? He had to go around and apologize to all the people whose political careers he ruined. Who was the governor of Florida who had a pacemaker? And he said, "I don't think we should vote for somebody who has to jumpstart his heart every morning." So he said some terrible things, but again, that is Bush as an opportunist. He's the two-term sitting vice president of a very popular president. That's another program, we hope. and he wanted to be the president. It's like he's got a resume, and he's ticking off all these things. And the
he was a congressman. We talked about that. But he was head of the Republican Party.
Honorary board chair of Planned Parenthood. He was for birth control, which many Republicans in those days were not.
And he was essentially the equivalent of the ambassador to China, the only president ever
have
in
done
China.
That. And, you know, when he was in the House, it was Nixon who encouraged him to run for a U.S. Senate seat. And I think he won in the primary, but when he got to the general election, he got beaten pretty badly. And Nixon felt badly about that. And that's when he sent Bush to the United Nations. So
He was the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations.
And so it seems that his...
But what about CIA director? I mean, that's, to me, the sketchiest thing he did was to be CIA director.
And, you know, it was the CIA who flooded the urban areas, particularly on the West Coast, with crack cocaine.
Okay.
And he took advantage of that, too.
I'm not hearing much talk about Iran-Contra.
Well, Bobby,
I think his scandal more than Reagan's.
And you're the person who's better at foreign affairs than I. But yeah, there's a list of things we can start talking about now that he's in the ground and let the week run out and give him a decent burial and everything. But people, you know, already the Black Twitter is lit up with all these things about the war on drugs. I had forgotten about the young 19-year-old Washington, D.C. man. You know, Bush's whole thing was you can buy crack cocaine in the vicinity of the White House. Mm-hmm. And so they found a young 19-year-old man who didn't live in the White House neighborhood, but arranged for him to buy drugs. And that young man is still in prison today. So I think there should be a pardon there.
Yeah, I think he probably got it from one of the Contras.
Probably. But that was the big thing. And when Maxine Waters talked about that, or Reverend Jeremiah Wright, we just listened to that his sermon today, and he talked about Reverend Wright. That's right. He talked about that. Floods their neighborhoods with drugs. Malcolm X was talking about that in 1963, 64.
I agreed with the wrong Reverend Wright when he said God would damn America if we killed innocents. And I think we did kill innocents
in Iraq. And it's funny that you should bring that up because we talked about that quote. And you know how precise I am. You know, well, I like to be. I'm a wordsmith, and I think you need to be somewhat careful with words, especially if you're scholars like we are.
Okay.
And one of the things that I wrote this on the board. You know, he said, "God damn America." That is in the Bible. It's all throughout the Bible. All sorts of places talk about what happens to the country who turns his back on God. God will vomit you out of his mouth and things like that. He said, "God damn America," three words, not "God damn" is in one word, and then America. And so he didn't say anything that wasn't true. But, you know, Bush, he took these opportunities when he saw that playing to Reagan's base. Remember how Reagan kicked off his campaign in Neshoba County?
Oh, it wasn't
where
that,
Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney were.
Wasn't that Philadelphia?
Yes, Philadelphia, Mississippi. So he was not above taking advantage of that.
And he talked about states' rights. Yes. And he was highly praised by a man named David Duke.
Yes.
Said, looks like a Klansman wrote that
only
platform.
Only in a suit and tie. So this is so much what we've been talking about in class the last couple of weeks. But, you know, I think that there are things that we, you know, we can say. But let him have his week will run out. But Black Twitter is already lit up with reminding people of these things. So there's always somebody.
And is that the actual Black Twitter? Is that the site?
No, but I've been watching The Root and the Twitter thing feeds that come through there. And people brought up Iran-Contra and the drug deal thing. You can get crack around the corner from the White House.
Well, let me be positive. I think the most positive thing he ever did was try to talk his son out of packing a rock. Is that him and Brent Spunkle?
Yeah, you know.
Not successfully, but it was... You know, he sent Lawrence Eagleburger out to write an op-ed saying, don't do it, it's a mistake.
And look what happens when you disobey your father.
Well, particularly your father, who, you know, was former head of the CIA and knew that Iraq wasn't really a country.
Right.
Artificial construct created by the British.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was, you know, he did. He wrote that book, but he also, it's funny you should mention this. There's a new book out, just came out about 3 or 4 months ago, called The Last Republicans. And it has a side view, like you're on a coin or something, of the two Bushes, Paul and Son. And the book is not so much about Republican politics and stuff, but the relationship between the two of them. And that they are probably the last Republicans, the Republican Party as we know it. Certainly H.W. was the last of these patrician, you know, aristocratic Republicans, but even W is, I mean, the Republican Party is, as we've seen it the last 50 or 60 years, it's dead.
And now you've got a nationalistic, far-right, alt-right type of party?
Yeah, you know, it is kind of frightening in a way. I don't know if you know this, I've watched very little television, but Murphy Brown is back.
I did know that.
Yes, and the episode they did last week was having Frank Fontana go to one of these alt-right rallies and just get the crap beat out of him. And, you know, it does make you pause and think that this country's definitely going in the wrong way.
And you would know that some of your background there, the question of lynchings in Ohio, some of your scholarly work. So,
yeah, I'm going to be off next spring working on that.
So the question is, how far back have we gone?
Well, we're at least back to 1896 with Plessy versus Ferguson. This whole idea of removing Black people from public spaces.
And also from the voting rolls.
Yes.
Where we're pre-65.
H.W. was against the Voting Rights Act, was against the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and W., although he signed an extension, argued that Texas should not still be subjected to that. You know, the former governor of Texas said Texas didn't need to be under the auspices of the Voting Rights Act.
Well, we know Ohio needs to be under it.
And what's going on? Where is that down in, is it North Carolina or something, where they've got that
the rigging of the congressional seat?
Yes. So, and we saw that. We saw that this is the... you know, as you know, these midterm elections are said to be, you know, corrective in some sort, and to a certain degree that's been it. But you can see that it wasn't just that Black people didn't go to the polls. It's just that for the last several years, states have been purging Black people from the voters' list. And so we saw voter turnout drop 9%. As that, I was flunking statistics when I dropped it, but... As you know, that is statistically significant. And it isn't because Black people, well, there's no Black person running for president, so I'm going to stay home. In fact, as you remember, when Hillary and Senator Obama were battling it out, a lot of Black people, John Lewis for one of them, for instance, they were on Hillary's side because they said they knew her, she had a good record, They forgot about No Child Left Behind and you know, the death penalty in Arkansas. But they were not fans of Obama. I shouldn't say fans. That makes it, that dismisses the seriousness. But they were not supporting him, in part because they just assumed that he couldn't win.
But also, it was Bill Clinton who put a million more police officers on the streets and federalized many of the crimes that were part of the Nixon and Reagan bogus drug wars.
And again, this is so much a parallel to the 1890s.
How's that? Break it down for me.
Well, you know, the removing black people from public spaces, mm-hmm. as you know, there was a war on drugs in the 1890s, primarily aimed at immigrants and poor white people and black people. The drug was of choice was the 63% solution or 37% solution that Sherlock
Little
Holmes liked so much.
Patent medicine.
Yes, exactly. And so
laudanum if you needed to calm down.
Exactly.
And
there was
cocaine if you needed a little pick me up.
So, I mean, so many parallels to that time. And the conservative presidents, and, you know, we look back at that. That was also progressivism, but progressivism was a lot about pushing the middle class line. Birth control was for rich women, but you had to make sure.
The white middle class line.
Yes, the white middle class
line.
And not
the new immigrants from Eastern and Southern Europe.
Were breeding, as were poor white women and poor black women, and that they had to put a stop to that. So birth control, it wasn't about, of course, you know, you want women to be able to control their reproductive lives, but it was mostly about, we don't want these women reproducing, and we need to do something about that.
Yeah, I was just reading about a book about a fallen woman. one of the early lawsuits where she sued this congressman who was in his 40s.
I've seen that book, and I hope next semester when I'm on sabbatical, I've got to review
it. But when it turned out, like, she was 17, and they sent her off to the Home for Fallen Women.
That's it.
Very Victorian.
They had a similar home here in Columbus, so you probably didn't know that. It was the Phyllis Wheatley Home for Unwed Mothers.
So it
was right down here on Jefferson Avenue. So there are lots of parallels here, lots of parallels. So it's an interesting time. But I think in the next week or so, some of these stories about the Elder Bush are going to come out, and we'll be able to have a good and open debate on that. But I also do think that we have to recognize that he was in some ways an especially gifted public servant, and just the sense of decency and graciousness has left politics. Now, he had a lot to do with that.
People feel nostalgic
yes.
for him because you didn't think your president was, you know, crazed, irrational. And it's a sense of protocol
yes.
and what it means symbolically and ceremonially to be the president.
Exactly. So I do think there are lots of good things to say about him, but there's lots of bad things to say about him, especially in terms of race and AIDS. He was on totally the wrong side of AIDS. I can't remember the exact quote, but his idea was that people who are getting it deserve it because of the lifestyles they have. So no one... I'm sure that next week, you know, after all the ceremonial stuff is over, people will be picking over his carcass, so to speak.
And again, a little nostalgic because of who's there now. Thanks a lot, Marilyn Howard, for coming in and being on the other side of the news.
Bob, thank you so much for having me. I kind of missed this.
Always fun. Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.